From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of May 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll review yesterday's USDA report numbers and talk about the impact on the marketplace with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass will be here. He'll talk about what's happening in the United States now. Take a look further into the summer for us, and we'll hopscotch around the globe a bit too. Get updates on the Black Sea, the second crop corn in Brazil, and how things are progressing as the fall has come along in the nation of Argentina after their very dry conditions. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh, one other item to take up for the day, too. If you can stay with us, Commodity Week in the second half hour of our program today will come up. Our panelists for the day include Dan Secunder of DC Analysis, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Market. Commodity Week up on the website already at willag.org, but stay with us on our home station. You can hear the whole thing this afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Mike Zuzlo now joins us from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Happy Friday to you, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Indeed. So on Monday, the May contracts all expire, and I'm taking a look at the May-July in the corn and the May-July in the soybeans, and there's a pretty good spread. Generally, we will step down as opposed to come up in that process. What do you think will happen this time around?
I think that's likely if the trade negotiations continue to remain more negative than positive. And I think that was the heart and soul of this week's trade. We came into this week with a technical sell signal on the daily charts. And so we kind of knew with rain coming in the forecast for the Corn Belt that it was going to need to be a really good report by USDA to feed the bull. And we also, more importantly, needed some good trade news. And we really didn't get that by the end of the week. And I think specifically, there is speculation now coming from the Financial Times that the Chinese vice premier is not coming to Washington next week for a second round of talks because of, as the Financial Times puts it, a continuing rift between the two parties. And just this afternoon, we talked to, through Reuters, we talked to the Mexican trade minister, the economy minister, and he said they are not going to be pushed into a rushed deal on NAFTA. And it sounds like they're going to have to work through the weekend. And I think this is a continuing issue, Todd, that the agriculture commodities, whether you're looking at cattle or hogs, I mean, look at what happened to hogs between the last 3 days of a strong run-up, and then today we gave it all back and dropped substantially over 3%. I think these, simply put, is really based upon trade, how this market is closing week to week.
So this is something that the market has to assess mostly on a daily basis, in that there are some facts, but a whole lot of rumor that surrounds it, and not a lot to do except to watch what's happening in D.C. and listen to that, which is coming around in from the rest of the globe. I suppose that makes your job pretty difficult, I would think.
Well, yeah, and when you get an early morning email that or newswire report that hits your box, it says about 183,000 tons of U.S. sorghum are heading to Spain at a sharp discounted price that we're going to China, was going to go to China. You know, these are the kind of things that, whether you're talking about the almond industry being on one of the major news networks today in the business news, or whether you're talking about our own industry, this is starting to hurt. I mean, we saw it in the weekly export sales. They were just unbelievably dismal when it came right down to it for most of the commodities. And I'm not trying to be Barney the Bear here. I just think it goes back to the wheat market is our best indicator. The meal and cattle are also extremely good indicators to what this what the sense of the market is in terms of investor flows and their sentiment on the demand side of the equation. And wheat did not perform, did not get the report that the wheat quality tour suggested, how USDA came up with a 46.8 average yield and the acreage that they came up with, given the spring wheat planting delays and given the wheat quality tour in the hard red wheat belt last week. These are the things that I think help unwind the market. But the start and stop point, as you say, is what does the trade picture look like with some of our largest trading partners in agriculture? And it's going to be something that we are going to continue to deal with. And next week may be one of the biggest weeks we've had to deal with it, because we're kind of getting down to the wire in terms of the Mexican elections coming around the corner. And we're kind of having to get to a deal with China fairly soon, or we're going to back up even more soy, it seems, because the USDA report says we've got more soy out there from Brazil. And Abiev came out this afternoon or this morning at midday and said, well, it's not 117 like USDA says, it's over 118 million tons as far as Brazil's bean production. So these are the kind of things, when you have these kind of trade issues going on, they really hit the market pretty quickly.
No, they hit the market pretty quickly. If we resolve them, how much gain would we get back, do you suppose?
Well, this is where you're probably going to have to rewind this. But I mean, given the corn report and given the fact that we've got coarse grain stocks now in terms of stocks and stocks to use ratios down at the lowest levels globally since 14, 15 marketing years, and U.S. ending stocks are below 1.7 billion, we're at the tightest in 5 years. If that wheat market could bottom because the trade negotiations turn favorable, especially NAFTA, I think the corn could take out the 425 high and be on its way towards the 460 level, because that's what the elasticity chart suggests to me at a 1.6-1.7 carryover. And, you know, we talked about that number at the Beef House meeting when I was on the corn panel. To me, the corn has the lowest amount of competitors out there, and it has the most upside potential on weather, because unlike the beans, the USDA gave us big acres on corn, relatively speaking, and a relatively high yield at 174. They did the exact opposite in the beans. So while we probably got the lowest U.S. bean ending stocks number of the marketing year, in my opinion, on yesterday's report, I think we could work the corn ending stocks lower.
And if, like, as was suggested on our program, this one, in fact, the Friday afternoon program last week with you, the Chinese drag their feet, and for some reason, a NAFTA deal is not struck. Do you suppose the price of soybeans dropping so much would cause producers to turn to wheat as an alternative to plant in larger numbers? And could even if a deal is struck sometime after the fall, that continue the push for a downturn in the marketplace? And this is kind of what I'm thinking, is that if they drag their feet long enough, if we don't get NAFTA done, we probably don't get it done through the fall, right? And the price of soybeans tumbles. The West, especially the Dakotas, are where we plant a large part of the soybeans is going to China. 70% of North Dakota's soybeans, in fact.
Right.
I think they probably go back to wheat. Wheat acres are available. That drives down the price of corn long term, and it sort of tumbles. But does it tumble out of control for a while? Is the biggest problem, I think. It, or maybe I'm just trying to analyze, and I shouldn't be doing that. I should just ask you.
No, I think these are pertinent questions to the listeners out there. I think you're doing the agriculture community a service by asking these questions. I think we've got to elevate our analysis and our marketing plan sincerely here, because this is something we haven't dealt with since the late 70s and early 80s as far as potential repercussions. I think the problem becomes, at that stage of the game, under your scenario, it really doesn't matter what's planted until the farmers actually get out in their tractor cabs. I think the problem is the bean market is falling so much. And I think I did numbers before the crop report this week to my clients and subscribers on what a negative trade assessment would be if we did not get NAFTA and we didn't get China. And I'm looking at over an 800, possibly 900 million bushel carryover in soybeans. So at that point, I think the sinking tide, you know, lowers all boats, and beans lead and drag the corn and wheat lower. And so when it comes to the cost of production and what's the best thing to plant, maybe it doesn't matter because we're still at the same relative price because they've all been pulled down. I think that's what I'm looking at right now.
And on the flip side, again, if NAFTA gets put through and they're able to come up with some type of Chinese deal sooner rather than later, things look really good.
Look, I've got to think that the North Korea, China, United States triangulation on the geopolitics has got to be related to China and their desire to have more power in the Yellow Sea and to have more power in the South China Sea and therefore get their new Silk Road up and running full tilt. And if that's the case, you've got a commodity demand market that would rival what Jimmy Rogers saw in the 1980s when he rode his bike across China and wrote Hot Commodities. So you have two very different scenarios that you could map out and game out and say, yeah, this looks realistic.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for a Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is now here from Agribull to update us on the weather forecast. Boy, it's been, after April, so cold, kind of nice that it's gotten warm here in the Midwest. What do you think of the change in weather?
Well, you know, April came in as the second coldest April on record. Those records go back 124 years in Illinois. Wisconsin and Iowa had their coldest Aprils on record. And then all of a sudden, we made this flip where we're getting some kind of early summer-like weather. I mean, shoot, we may have high temperatures today that get up close to our normal high temperatures in the months of June and July. Got a, you know, a really nice weather. And because of that, we've really rapidly accumulated growing degree units, more than 120 or so in the last 7 or 8 days, 120 growing degree units here in Illinois, which meant that corn we planted, you know, in the last 10 days, it's emerged, and that's pretty rapid. We made a huge, planting pace jump because of this nice warm weather we've had. We jumped 42%, which was not the highest. We actually made in 2013, jumped 67% in 1 week, but still, it's been quite nice. Now, I'll tell you this, if you got in a car right now and drove north, by the time you got toward the Chicago, I'm sorry, the you know, the Illinois Wisconsin border there near Chicago, there's actually a 40 degree drop in temperatures. So it is not a pleasant day in southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, or in Iowa or Minnesota. And that's interesting because it's those regions, so southern Wisconsin, also Iowa and Minnesota, that are still quite far behind on planting progress. So it's raining there today, and they've got rain focused in that area for the next 2 days. So they're not going to get any field work done. They're not going to get anything planted over the next couple of days because of this, at least not a lot planted. So that's our main weather feature right now, is this incredible front, this warm front that's to the north of us here in Champaign. But southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, quite cold. We have temperatures, you know, north of Madison that are 36 degrees right now. So I'm glad I'm here where it's in the 80s and not there where it's so much cooler.
When does this have an impact, the lateness actually of planting? Have you looked at any point into, you know, how that differs from one place to the other? I know mostly we think about May 15th, May 20th and for corn, and then June 1 or something thereabouts for soybeans. But it does, according to the agronomist here, of course, drop off pretty dramatically as we start to go through the month of May.
Yeah, and that research is pretty well founded. But I'll say this nationally, we don't start to see a strong correlation between planting date and yields until we get toward the very, very end of May and the beginning of June. So, you know, we're right now in the ideal planting window. So this, you know, I know it feels late. I know a lot of farmers want to get in late April, you know, and very, very early May. But, you know, we're not in danger of having issues with having yield issues later on in the season. And, you know, think about last year, we had some late planted crop that finished or, you know, was in grain fill in August, which was beautiful. So that's why it's difficult to really say that. But, you know, the significant thing here to be thinking about would be if a decision gets made to change up an operation, you know, going from corn to beans or other way, just because of the delays that are happening. And that's always an individual farmer decision that's quite, you know, quite hard for us to judge and predict.
Let's cover one other crop, wheat, especially as it relates to Kansas out into Oklahoma. I think there's something happening maybe in the Four Corners area that has an impact on those places that produce wheat.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we need rain there. So we've got we just got a new drought monitor update yesterday, and it really shows not much change in where we grow a lot of wheat in the center part of the country, where we still have some pretty well entrenched drought. And that drought monitor is cumulative, so it takes a long time to get rid of it. But here's the big change. You're right about the four corners. We are going to be seeing a pattern shift such that we get a nice deep trough in the jet stream that digs through the four corners. And what that signifies to us here, that study weather, is that is a pattern that sets up a lot of severe weather in the Great Plains. So we typically have this time of year this well-established front called a dry line. It's a boundary between the really hot, humid air out of the Gulf of Mexico that runs basically north-south, Nebraska to Texas. And on the other side of that line, you have the dry air coming off the mountains and the dry air of the desert southwest. And it's just it's a breeding ground for thunderstorms. It's a beautiful front that just kicks up that warm, moist, unstable air and blows up storms. So we're going to be in a really active pattern for a lot of severe weather, at least through the third week of May. I'll tell you, my students at the U of I are super excited about this because they're all going to go storm chasing and go out there and witness all of it. But, you know, for relieving droughts, it's going to be hit or miss. These individual storms, yeah, they put down a ton of precipitation, but it's not like a big blanket of precipitation like you can get out of a big low pressure system. So repeated chances of storm through the next 15 days out there. Where it's dry, north of that. So in the north and South Dakota, where it's going to be dry, southern Canada, where they're already dry. So that is that's an area that we're going to have to be watching for some continued issues as we move throughout this growing season. But yeah, the Central Plains about ready to get lit up with a lot of severe weather.
Let's hopscotch the globe just a bit now. The Black Sea area, what do you see?
Well, it's been dry there for the last 45 days, but the longer-term forecast for the next 15 days doesn't show a strong anomaly either way. So not wet, not dry. Which means that we could be seeing, you know, some more normal precipitation patterns moving through the Black Sea.
Second crop corn in Brazil?
Well, we've seen a pretty interesting flip here. Remember how great the monsoon was early? Well, we've seen the monsoon end. It ended a little early in southern Brazil. So that second crop corn down there has been struggling. I've got a lot of reports that it's not going to be another bumper crop. So quite disappointing. And even Mato Grosso's turned dry. So when they turn dry this time of year, they're turning dry when it is already supposed to be dry because the monsoon is ending. At least it ends in April.
We talked about Argentina all winter long during their growing season. That's over. Do we see any change there?
Unfortunately, for the last several days and for the next 15 days, the forecast is for them to be much, much wetter than average. So what crop they have been salvaging, trying to harvest, they're now having to deal with a lot of that, you know, the harvesting of that crop in a lot of rain. And it's just, they've been dealt a pretty rough deck of cards this year.
Here in the United States, have you thought much about our summer months?
Yeah, you know, I've been kind of formulating a plan for summer here for quite some time, and I'll tell you some of the big features that we're going to be watching. Interesting things going on in the Pacific Ocean right now and the Atlantic. We have some cooling in the main development region where we grow a lot of hurricanes in the Atlantic. We have warm water off the southwest coast of the United States. So this is from the Baja extending to the Central Pacific. And then we have what's called a Modoki El Nino, and that's basically where you have cooler waters south of the equator and warmer waters north. Now, historically, that pattern tends to favor cooler or near average summers in the eastern third of the country. What we're seeing here in the longer range forecast, now this is coming from an analog technique that I run, this is coming from the long range European model, and this is also coming from the 8 global models in the National Multimodal Ensemble. We think, based on all that, heat stays in the Central Plains mostly and extends toward the northwest. So I think those are the regions that have the highest probability of having much above average temperatures. These same models suggest that the state of Illinois has a warmer than average summer, but it's not the hottest location in the country in terms of temperature anomalies. Where they're keeping the drier conditions, northwest United States, Central Plains again. And there's long-range precipitation forecasting is quite challenging. But what it kind of signals to me is we have to watch the pattern set up in June to see if we get those all-important ridge-riding thunderstorms that kind of come from the northwest to kind of bring us the rain at the right time in July. And there's not a soul on the face of the earth that can forecast the position of those for you today for July. We have to wait and see how the whole pattern sets up at the end of June. So, but it does signal that we could be watching the Central Plains and northwest United States for some heat this year.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric.
Yep, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is from Agrible, from right here in Champaign County, Illinois.